Welcome everyone to the Lean on Agile show. I'm your host, Shaheen, and today I have a very special guest, David Anderson. Thank you, David, for joining us.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me, Shaheen. Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure having you. I know David for a long time. In the past couple of years, I got to know him more closely. I was following his work, and through the Kanban community, I get through some people to know him and his books, recommended those, and then I got me into more learning about Kanban, practicing those, even though not telling people that I'm practicing those in my professional life, and then found out that I'm using this Kanban method better and better every day, and it's helping me to be a better consultant and a coach every day. So nowadays I'm AKT with Kanban University, and it's a privilege to have the person behind this Kanban movement with us today. I won't do the justice introducing David, so I'm going to let him introduce himself briefly. David, tell us, who is David?
Okay, thank you. So I'm David Anderson, and I'm the chief executive of the Movius Group, which is a company that includes Kanban University and the David G. Anderson School of Management, our publishing imprints, our Kanban conferences business, and our relatively recently, since last year, Movisoft, our new software application business. And I live mostly in Bilbao in northern Spain, where we have two offices, the David G. Anderson School of Management Training Center and the Movius Group Europe office, where the Movisoft team are located. I guess I'm famous for introducing Kanban into modern workplaces, professional services businesses. Over the last 20 years or so, not quite 20 years, a little bit less, I've written 6 books, and our training is licensed all over the world. More than 300 trainers, 63 different business partner companies promoting the training on every continent other than Antarctica.
One day.
Yeah, you know, one of the Chileans tells me that he's promised me to teach Kanban on Antarctica because the Chileans have a base there. Right. We'll see. Was that good enough, Shaheen?
Yeah. I was going to add to that or complement that with what you had at the back of your blue book, as we called it. So you introduce yourself, David Anderson pioneered the Kanban technique with Microsoft in 2004. And has been refining the approach ever since. I love this sentence because that embodies the evolutionary change that we are talking about in Kanban. So you haven't said that this is the Kanban that you guys need to read and learn about and practice it, but it's evolutionary. You are being refining that. And today we are going to talk about some of the latest 2 refinements that I have seen from the Kanban community.
It's interesting that the back of the book is 11 years old. The book was published 2010. So after 11 years, that sentence or that descriptive paragraph, it's still relevant. It had robustness, yeah. That we're still doing that. We're still refining it. Right. So that's great.
So tell us how the world of Kanban has changed since 2004. What are the big changes that you have seen in that our audience needs to be aware of?
Okay, well, 2004, that's a long time ago. So we got started on this really because my phone rang one day. And at the time I worked at Microsoft, my phone rang. It was a manager in a different part of Microsoft, and I didn't know him at all at the time. And he'd seen me post some answer on an internal news group, some development teams on the Windows Vista release, which if you've got a long memory, you'll remember that was the aborted one that eventually became Windows 7. They had asked some question about agile software development and how they were struggling with it and could someone come and help them. And I had replied and said that I could come and pay them a visit. And this other manager had seen this post and he had recognized the name, and he had a copy of my first book. And so he'd called me up and he said, "What a coincidence. You know, I saw your answer there and you're called David Anderson and I'm reading a book by some guy called David Anderson." And I replied to him and said, "I am David Anderson." And he said, "Yes, what a coincidence. I've got this book and it's really good and it's by some guy with the same name as you." I said, "No, I am David Anderson. You're reading my book." Mm-hmm. So a week or so later, I was giving an evening talk, a meetup group at the Honeywell office across the freeway from Microsoft campus. And he came to visit me. And afterwards, he came up to me and he said, "I just volunteered to run the worst performing department in Microsoft's IT division, and I believe you can help me fix it." Well, 15 months later, not only had we fixed it, we had turned it from the worst performing department in Microsoft's IT division into the best performing department. Mm. And both of us, his name was Dragos Dimitriou, and I were given an award, the Microsoft's Quality Process Improvement Award for the IT division for that year. And I'm not sitting at my home office near Bilbao in Spain. If I was, the award is on the wall behind me, but not today. So what happened there was, here was a group that was doing the software maintenance for things like Microsoft's payroll system, their human resources record keeping system, their facilities management systems, their security, physical security systems, things like software that prints out your employee badge and makes sure that it's coded correctly so that you can enter buildings, that kind of thing. So those sort of applications that spanned across the whole of Microsoft's organization, so they were known as the Cross IT group, and they would get requests for upgrades and changes, and they were lousy at it, and we fixed that problem. We turned completely unpredictable, 0% on-time delivery, and an average delivery time of 5 or 6 months for small changes, we turned that into 98% within expectations and an average delivery time of 11 days. So that was done by implementing a Kanban system. So at the time, it was just a tool that I had in my toolbox, and I viewed my job as helping managers in modern business work, intangible goods work, where you can't see it. It's invisible. It's not physical. You can't walk in a warehouse and pick some of it off a shelf. So intangible goods industries and traditional management guidance is all based on physical, tangible goods industries, manufacturing, distribution, those kind of things. There really wasn't, or at least in the academic circles to this day, there still really isn't very good guidance for modern workplaces. And I wanted to help with that. Kanban, in this instance, the use of a Kanban system, it was a point solution to fix a problem. But it worked really well, so we thought, well, we should try this again in some other places. And some other people saw me talk about it at a conference or maybe read something I posted on my blog. And they tried it at their workplace, and it worked quite well for them. A guy called Eric Landis had good success at Robert Bosch plant in South Bend, Indiana, for example. So this was going pretty well. 2 or 3 years went by, and I'd moved from Microsoft to run the software engineering group at another Bill Gates company called Corbis. And what we discovered there was that Kanban was not only useful, but the whole concept of limiting your work in progress, it puts people under stress under stress to make choices about what do we work on now, what should wait until later, and if so, when, how much later, and what should we not do at all. And when you have that stress, you have a board on the wall, you've visualized invisible work, you've mapped the workflow, you've limited the work in progress, you've implemented a Kanban system, it focuses minds. And when things are not flowing well, or deliveries are not happening when the customer would expect them, or other challenges just in general that we're not living up to expectations, then what we found was that this little bit of stress that Kanban was introducing was catalyzing conversations about what should be changed. And the cartoon that's on the cover of the Kanban book tries to capture the essence of that. That small group of people are standing in front of the board, having their daily meeting, and they're discussing how well things are going, and it's not going so well. You know, I'm busy, I'm overloaded, I'm idle. Things are not flowing smoothly. And the fourth character says, let's do something about it. So what we have there is some stress in the environment and a feedback mechanism and an act of leadership. And that catalyzes change. We make a change. Hopefully it's an improvement. Things get a little bit better and then we repeat. So it's the essence of continually improving towards some goal or outcome. Well, what is that goal or outcome? And back in 2007, 2008, 2009, we really hadn't defined that. It was just enough to say that we want things to get better and we want them to get better in an incremental, evolutionary fashion. We're not going to pretend that we're smart enough to design the perfect solution. And we're also, I think, humble enough to recognize that today's circumstances might change by tomorrow, and certainly next week, next month, next year. And if the circumstances are changing, the perfect solution for today probably isn't the perfect solution for next month or 3 months from now or a year from now. What we need is an organization that's capable of adapting itself as the circumstances change. And that can even just be like over many years, there might be stability, but within an individual year, there might be seasonality in the demand. We find that with organizations that do regulatory requirements. And Dragos's group at Microsoft, they did some regulatory requirements. They upgraded the payroll system every year for just basic things like tax table changes. And that those requests arrived in the middle of September every year, a big spike. So it's a seasonal spike. So across the whole year, the process and the way they're working can't be the same. It has to change. It has to adapt to the seasonality in the work. So at the core, we need to be able to adapt. And what we got better at in the last decade, so since 2010, was understanding that adaptation and what we're trying to achieve. What I found was if you talked about we're wiring your organization for continuous improvement and your workforce will constantly suggest improvements forever and ever and ever, amen. And what was happening with executives who heard that message was they just glazed over. It was like zombies or deer in the headlights or something, because it sounded to them like some kind of wishful thinking, some sort of nirvana, this, you know, goal that could never be achieved. And it turned out that there was much more pragmatic guidance that could be given, a way of talking about it that was better, which is we will improve to the point where everybody is satisfied. Your customer is satisfied. The regulator is satisfied. Perhaps the owners, the shareholders, the taxpayers, whoever the various stakeholders, that they all have their own needs and expectations, and those needs and expectations represent some sort of fitness landscape.
Right.
And therefore, we want to evolve until what we're doing is fit enough for the situation, for its environment, and then leave it alone. But if the environment changes, then it has to evolve again in the future. And over the last 10 years, as I said, not only did we introduce that language and that way of thinking, which sounds much more pragmatic, that we get executives who think, yes, that's what I want. I want my organization to be fit. We want the customers to be satisfied. We want regulatory authorities to be satisfied. We want other stakeholders to be satisfied. Fitness makes sense to them. And the fact that it's bounded by some testable criteria, that we know when we're done because we've reached the fitness threshold, that's much better than we're going to improve forever and ever and ever.
Right.
And then in the last 5 years, what's really happened is the codification of how to drive that evolutionary change in pragmatic incremental steps. And from enough case studies that we were able to codify and map patterns, organizations that behaved in this way tended to implement Kanban in that way. So matching patterns, organizational behavior to some pattern of Kanban, well, if we can change the organizational behavior, its culture, its ability to manage risk, the decision-making of the managers, then the pattern of Kanban should also change. And these things can sort of work their way up a ladder. And we call that the Kanban maturity model.
I was going to comment on the case studies in Kanban community or the training that I have been part of and I'm delivering. I really enjoyed the case studies, and that's a very pragmatic approach to introducing change and get them to the next level. And I believe that's a big advantage of the Kanban community, that they are sharing those case studies with others. And I'm glad that you brought it up, that through these case studies that you guys have done, you codified some patterns and called it the KMM or Kanban maturity model. So let's talk about this codification and the KMM. So how do you define this KMM to a person that's very new to Kanban? How would you describe that?
So first of all, we have an organizational maturity model that describes how organizations behave and the outcomes that they typically achieve with that behavior. How well they manage risk, how resilient they are, how trustworthy they are, the level of trust inside their organization, their culture, how predictable they are, how much they anticipate things evolving rather than just simply reacting to events. All of those things are considered, and that's mapped against a seven-level model, so seven levels of organizational maturity. Of course, we didn't just think this up out of nothing. Right? We built it upon other people's experiences and things that had been published over the previous 30, 40, maybe 50 years. So we have seven levels of organizational maturity. And then given that, we can read a case study or watch someone presenting their experience report at a conference. And listening to what we hear or what we read in the case study, or visiting clients, visiting companies around the world, we can observe what's going on there and map it to a maturity level in our head. Then we can look at how have they implemented Kanban. And what we found was there was a correlation. The implementations of Kanban changed at different levels of maturity of organization. And the much better outcomes the sort of outcomes we saw at places like Microsoft, where we trebled the productivity of the department, we reduced the delivery times by more than 90%, we increased the product, the predictability from virtually zero to 98%. And these are the things customers want. They want fast, predictable, with good quality. They want their supplier to be trustworthy and so on and so on. And we see that emerge in the model at level three, and it gets stronger and better at levels four and five. So we know that we want to get organizations to at least level four. However, we also look around at what we see implemented in the world and realize most of the organizations are at level zero, one, or two. Very few at level three, almost none at level four or above. So the challenge becomes not one of, can we come up with much more advanced and complicated Kanban solutions? We had a bunch of them already. People weren't using them. They weren't using them because they weren't ready for it. So really the challenge isn't about improving the Kanban. The challenge is about improving the organizations, improving their maturity. And what we've discovered is that that maturity is limited by the maturity of the leaders. It's limited by their culture. The organizational maturity is limited by the organizational culture, and the culture is limited by the leadership. So we needed to codify culture, and we needed to codify leadership, and ultimately introduce a mechanism for developing leaders that if someone comes to you and said, okay, we know we're in chaos, but we love the sound of this maturity level four. That sounds fantastic. Take us there. And they're running a maturity level one organization and they're a maturity level two leader. You'll never get to level four. Right. You have to change the leader first. So it's taken a long time, about 6 years altogether, to codify all this stuff. And using case studies and other evidence that we've gathered from our conference series and just from visiting organizations, that evidence was gathered over approximately a 15-year period. And it's taken 5 to 6 years to codify it, to write it down, to turn it into consumable assets. For example, the training classes that you can offer.
A couple of questions that has been brought up by our audience, and I want to tie that to the Kanban maturity model, since we talked about the leadership and the culture of the organization when you want to evolve through the levels. So the question is, would there be a need to have a buy-in on the Kanban introduction to that organization? Or can you use these maturity models in an organization that not necessarily is Kanban, or they are let's say they are a Scrum or they are Waterfall? Would you be able to use these practices and techniques that you guys came up in the KMM or the maturity model for the leadership and the cultures?
So if the question is, does the organizational maturity model map to any organization? The answer is yes, it's an organizational maturity model. So whether that organization's using Kanban or not, it works. Right. The cultural mapping works. The description of the outcomes all work. The leadership maturity, all of that works. However, when you look at the poster for the Kanban maturity model, what's mapped on there are Kanban practices. Mm-hmm. There are no Scrum practices on there, for example. Yeah. And in that sense, no, you can't. Also, given the nature of Scrum and what it does and how it works and what it's intended for, it's highly unlikely that you're anything more than a maturity level one organization if you're using it. So it's highly unlikely that you're going to find maturity level four practices to map onto some Scrum version of the model. But could you do that? In principle, could you take the model, strip out the Kanban practices, understand the cultural definition, the outcomes definitions, the meaning of the model, the meaning of the seven levels of organizational maturity, and take a whole bunch of evidence that you've gathered of organizations using Scrum or Scaled Agile Framework or whatever the heck it might be, and build your own version of the model? Potentially, yes. What is that going to take? A very long time, a very large amount of evidence, and someone with a great deal of expertise.
And you mentioned, you referred to some sort of stat about most of the organization not being at a maturity level 4 and below, most of them 0 and 1. I believe that this is the first year that you guys are running a Kanban report, and Kanban annual report.
The state of Kanban survey. Yes, that's right.
Kanban survey.
So that's live. You can find it on kanban.university, the website, http://kanban.university. And the link to the survey is there. It's open until the 1st of April. So there's a few days left. If your organization's using Kanban in some shape or form, or even considering doing so, we'd love you to complete the survey and give us as much information about what's happening in the marketplace, what people are using. Because until now, our survey evidence is things like standing at a conference and asking people to raise their hands, or a certain amount we can observe in the marketplace, what people post on the internet, that type of stuff. Right. But a survey will help us put more rigor, more quantitative data rather than qualitative assessment.
And this survey is open to everyone, not the people that are practicing Kanban or the Kanban coaches specifically. Anyone in the organization can take part.
The survey is open to anyone, yes.
Yeah.
That we've done the marketing for the survey to our customer base, Kanbanize. We're partnering with Kanbanize and Swift Kanban. They've done the same thing. But the survey is open to anyone who cares to take 10 or 15 minutes of their day to fill it out for us. And we really need as much feedback as possible to help us accurately assess the market. So if you can find the time, you'll find the survey on kanban.university.
Yeah, and I'm going to post a link on the podcast notes so that you guys can find that one out. So let's talk about another new addition to the Kanban board, the new official Kanban guide that you guys published recently. It's very recent, I believe, 2 weeks passed by, or February was the official date of releasing that. So tell us a little bit about the Kanban guide, what that entails, and who should read that.
Indeed, well, thank you. So we've needed an introductory guide to explain what Kanban is. There's a lot of very poor quality material out there. There's a lot of misunderstanding. The Agile community, the Agile movement, have probably been the guiltiest of misunderstanding. And of course, it's very easy for someone to have a blog or some other source of publishing. And if they happen to have a relatively shallow, poor, or misguided comprehension of Kanban, but perhaps they're reasonably good at writing or well known in some other way, they get their material onto a website with very good search engine optimization. Perhaps InfoQ would be an example. They've been some of the worst offenders at publishing really bad Kanban guidance with very high search engine optimization. So that's been a problem for a very long time, probably for 12, 13 years already. And it's very difficult to drown out bad information with good information if there's 10 times or 100 times more people producing the bad information. So finally, we have the Kanban guide. And it's, I think, very accessible. The team did a fantastic job with it in terms of the, not just the content that's in it, and the copy, the writing that's in it, but the layout, the images. It's a very accessible, colorful, fun document. Mm. And in total, it runs to 16 pages, including the covers. So it's relatively short, but it has enough detail to help a beginner understand what Kanban is, or for that matter, something that you can give to someone. You can take the PDF, print it out, you can send them a link to the PDF so that you can perhaps correct their understanding, or if they're a complete novice and they don't have any understanding yet, that's fantastic. They don't have to unlearn the wrong information. So this helps them. What it's not intended as is a definitive standard document. Although it's 5 to 6 years old now, the essential Kanban condensed, which is about 100 pages, a little more than 100 pages, that's more of a standard document. This is really designed as an introduction to help people with the concepts, with the language, and also to explain what it isn't, to debunk some of the myths and the poor quality information that's elsewhere on the internet. So it's the definitive standard, and it's done incredibly well. You're right, it's only a couple of weeks old. The team did a great job with it, and I think consequently there was pent-up demand in the market, and we've served that market adequately with this document. People have spread the word. I think we had something close to 5,000 downloads on the first day.
Oh, wow.
So it's been incredibly popular, and I'm sure it will continue to be. The definitive standard, the definitive guide on what is the Kanban method. And if you're in an argument in the old days when we could socially mix with each other, if you're in an argument in a pub with someone over what is Kanban, the guide will answer those pub arguments. Those arguments you have with your colleagues at the water cooler or in the cafe over a cup of coffee or beers, this resolves all of those.
Right. So I can tell you the story of how I was using the Blue Book. So the Blue Book, before the Kanban Essential comes in place, was my Bible to go and have a conversation with other people. And like David Anderson says this, and what are interpretation? Then Kanban Essential come into place. It gave some standards, like, which is awesome. And now the Kanban book, a Kanban guide. So I see a pattern of being condensed, the Kanban, for the general public. And that's what the people, like, because the Kanban is becoming more popular and popular, so we need to reach out to more people in a very shortened amount of time and with shortened amount of media. So what's after Kanban guide? Is there a shorter version of, like, one pager about the Kanban that you can foresee that's coming up maybe in a couple of years for just introducing Kanban to people, or this is Kanban and something is not?
I think you already see some of that. So on page 3 of the guide, for example, there is a half page which is also available as a poster, the Kanban method. So we've already produced those assets, those one-page things. They already exist. People have access to them. And at the other end of the scale, we have the Kanban maturity model. And the book that goes with that, the second edition book, KMM 1.2, it's 130,000 words. So
it's not a small book.
And there's 150 plus practices described in there. So we have everything from the one-page guide to the 500-page you know, almost 2 inches thick. I think it's about 4 centimeters thick, the book, at the other end of the scale. And the goal going forward will be just to continue to refine those, to keep them fresh. We learn from teaching. We learn from small failures almost every day, that if someone hasn't understood correctly, or they've misinterpreted, or they've implemented something incorrectly, well, what was it about how we taught it to them, how we documented it, that could have been better? And that drives change and improvement. It drove changes like remove continuous improvement and replace it with fit for purpose, right? Rather than focusing on continual forever and ever, try to make something better, just focus on raising to the standard of what represent fitness in the environment. That those kind of changes happen over the years, and they make the method better in the sense that more people can do it, so it's more accessible. They are more likely to implement it properly, so it's more effective. It's more predictable. Both the implementation and the outcomes are much more predictable, and the whole thing is much more trustworthy. And gradually, we've also been stripping out language that relates to the IT industry. Because clearly, our early implementations were all in software development, IT services, so technology sector. And now we start to see growth in many other vertical markets, the legal sector with law firms, accounting, advertising agencies, market research companies, pharmaceutical development, so drug discovery, geology or geophysics, so activities like drilling holes in the ground to see whether there might be oil underneath, that kind of thing. So a very wide range of professional services, architecture, civil engineering, many different vertical markets. And this creates a challenge in the sense that our guidance has to be, it needs to be very general. It needs to use very plain language. And that makes it rather abstract. And for every individual vertical market, people do want to see examples and implementations from their vertical using their own language. And we need to be able to cope with both of those. So we've had to strip out the arcane technology sector language to create much more general plain language guidance. And then at the same time, look at how we can introduce specific flavors of things. And with the Kanban guide, we wanted to be as industry agnostic as possible. It's the introductory guide, whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, a civil engineer, an architect, an ad agency producer or account manager, or a geologist, geophysicist, pharmaceutical researcher, and so on and so on.
You talked about the continuous change or continuous improvement. I remembered about the KMM Plus. So tell us a little bit about KMM Plus. KMM Plus is a community of people that are using KMM in their organization, getting their stories around. And you tell us more about that.
So KMM Plus, the website is kmm.plus. You can go take a look. It's a subscription service, and it contains all the information which is in the Kanban Maturity Model book and newer information which we've developed since, things that are targeted for KMM 1.3 and a third edition of the book, perhaps September 2022. But it's more than just an online book, right? The information's accessible through, I think, already 15, 16 different infographics. and therefore it's visual, and you can navigate through the information in ways you could never do with a book. The idea is that KMM Plus becomes a tool that people use on a day-to-day basis to make sense of their current situation, to look for ideas, to look for definitive guidance on what to do next at a very detailed practice level. And we have a lot of plans for premium services with KMM Plus. It's not just an easy to navigate repository of information. There will be a lot more tooling. There will be explanatory videos. There will be tools for doing things like appraisals. There will be coaching tools. The premium levels of KMM Plus in future will be targeted at people who are doing learning, people who are doing coaching, and then ultimately the potential to have a marketplace where you connect people like you, coaches, trainers, consultants, experts in Kanban, with practitioners in the field who need advice, guidance, and help with their improvement initiatives. So KMM Plus is really the future, but it's already an incredibly powerful and useful tool that people should be using on a day-to-day basis. And they need to have a mindset that it's a tool to be used and not just an online version of a book. The KMM isn't a book to be read. It's this, you know, massive set of codified guidance on how to improve organizations.
We have started the KMM Book Club in Toronto, and we bought the book, and finally we found out that KMM Plus is a better place to have those conversations, because it's visually you can navigate to the places that you want to go and drill down, versus in the book you have to go through the pages, find out what exactly you want to do. So highly
That's great. I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah. At the time when I decided to do it and create it, there was a lot of skepticism. People were like, well, what is this for? Why didn't you just do a Kindle version of the book? But you can't do on Kindle what we're doing with KMM Plus. And ultimately, real practitioners are going to find KMM Plus so much more useful than a book. Physical books do still have their place. That just leaving something on your desk where other people can see it, that can be a useful thing to do. Mm-hmm. Or to be able to walk in a meeting with a book that's this thick and drop it on the table and it makes a thud. There are uses for physical books. And of course, and I'm still a fan of physical books, right? Actually, right here, right now, I'm reading, if you can see that there, it's the Netflix book by Reed Hastings. And I like to have books that I can just, you know, carry around to a, you know, a cafe or something and sit and read. I'm not particularly a fan of using electronic screens all the time. Right. So I think books have their place. We'll continue to publish books, but KMM Plus is really the future. It's the future of our business. It's the future of the way that we interact with our audience around the world. And right now, most people don't believe me or are skeptical of that, but let's have another conversation like this 10 years from now and see where we're at.
Hopefully
things change a lot in 10 years. That 10 years ago, we didn't have Kanban University. Yeah. The only person teaching Kanban in the world was at least Kanban for professional services work was me. Yeah. Right. So we've come a long way in 10 years.
Yeah. Exponential growth in the next 10 years, hopefully.
Well, the size of the organization isn't interesting to me. What's interesting is how many people have we helped and what difference are we making in the world, in the modern workplace, the performance of modern companies. And we hear a lot about things like employee engagement. And employee engagement goes up so much. If people have meaning in their work and they feel they're doing good work, their customers are happy, they hear good stuff back from their customers, that's what makes people happy at work. Having a nice break area and a fancy coffee machine, these are just crutches, you know, they're just painkillers for bad environments.
True.
So if we can make a real difference in the modern workplace, that's what I care about. And if we could do that with, say, 50 training companies, fantastic. If it takes us 2,500 before we really make a difference, then that's what it has to be. But we don't measure our success by the size of the network or the number of certificates we're issuing. What's much more important to me is that after someone's come through our training, they go back to their office and they do things differently, that they make an impact in their organization as a consequence of our training. That our brand essence is pragmatic, actionable, evidence-based guidance. And if that's true, what we should see coming back are genuine changes in organizations. So we measure our success and effectiveness by those stories, by what we hear.
Thank you, David. David, we are getting to the end of our conversation, and I want to engage the audience. We were using an online tool to ask you questions. I'm going to ask the one question that Karen asked. What is a common misconception or a myth about Kanban that many people have and that you would like to clarify?
Wow. Well, there's so many to choose from there. I think the most common one is that it's some sort of process framework. They've come at it from the wrong mindset. Now, people often just say framework. What they mean is process framework. Where it's something like the fit for purpose framework that I did with Alexei Zhegloff, that's a decision framework. It's not a process framework. So first of all, it's a process framework. What the heck is a process framework? A process framework is an incomplete process. And if we go back into the 1990s when we had defined methodologies, if the methodology told you everything, it told you the roles, the responsibilities, who does what, who hands things off to whom, and so forth, then it was complete. Well, imagine you strip out a lot of the detail and you just leave in the basic structure and you allow the implementer to finish, add the extra details, to customize it for themselves, if you like. That's what a framework is. And the Agile movement preferred frameworks because the old world was 15,000 pages of Rational Unified Process or 100,000 pages of the Accenture or Anderson Consulting, as they were, A1 process. And your process gurus came along with the process manual and they dropped it with a big thud on your table. And they spent 3-4 months with you tailoring the process. That meant shrinking it down. Right? Alistair Coburn called that shrink to fit. And the Agile approach was stretch to fit. You have a framework and then you add in the extra bits that you're going to need. And nevertheless, what you end up with is a defined process. You have a partially defined process called a framework and you add some stuff to it if you know what you're doing. And that's, if 20 years ago I was raising the alarm bell on this. People don't know what they're doing. They're not going to add their own stuff intelligently to these so-called frameworks. They're not going to be able to stretch to fit. They don't understand that. So using Alistair's terms of shrink to fit and stretch to fit, I said Kanban is evolve to fit. Mm-hmm. You start with what you do now, and you add the Kanban method and it causes what you do now to start changing and it evolves into something else, and that something else is fit for your environment. Therefore, it's a meta level activity. It's acting on your process. It isn't a process. It isn't a process framework. And therefore, the Kanban method cannot be compared to Scrum or Scaled Agile Framework or Extreme Programming or any of these Agile methods. It is not of the same genus. It's a different species altogether. It's more similar to the Toyota way or the five focusing steps in the theory of constraints. It's a definition of a method for evolving things. And that's the key misconception, that Kanban's not an agile method. It's a way of evolving your organization for improved agility. It's the alternative path to agility. That's why we use that as the slogan, the tagline for Kanban University.
Thank you, David. One more question that I have for you from Paul is, what online remote tools do you recommend for visualizing flow through a value stream that crosses through many teams?
So Kanban University has three partner companies, Kanbanize, Swift Kanban, and Nave. Nave is mostly a plugin for metrics and use in the Kanban cadences, the feedback mechanisms. So things you might reporting at service delivery review, operations review, risk review. The two Kanban tools we recommend are Kanbanize and Swift Kanban.
Okay, thank you.
That there are other ones, but there are reasons why, you know, we have business partnerships with the best tools on the market.
Right. Yeah. So one last question before I hand it to you, Dave. Any advices that you have in our professional lives? When you look back at your professional life, is there anything that you take from that? And for our practitioners, tell us that you pay attention to this. Were there anything that you would have done differently that in hindsight you want to share it with us?
I've been asked this question from time to time in these kind of things. And perhaps the last time it came up, I was asked for some advice, and I used the Yogi Berra one-liner, which is, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. Now, apparently this was actually very pragmatic, actionable, specific advice, because he lived in a house. It was kind of, I guess, up in a hill in the trees, and the gate was perhaps 500 meters away from the house. You know, so when you entered the gate, you'd start to go up, and then there was a fork in the road. But actually, the whole thing was a big loop. So he would tell people, you know, come in through the gate, and if you reach a fork in the road, just take it, because either way will lead you to my front door. But it's a fantastic piece of guidance. You know, if you reach a fork in the road, take it, make a decision, I'm going this way, I'm going this other way, and proceed with no regrets. Right. So I think that's fantastic career advice generally. I don't know how much time we have left there, but I think that's good. What else have I observed? That something we teach with Kanban, which is that there's nobody smart enough to figure out the answer, right? The smartest guy in the room is not smart enough. And therefore, we need to be able to respond to unfolding events and recognize that evolutionary change, whether it's in your own career or the workplace you're working in, is going to produce more, it will make you more resilient, and it will produce more robust outcomes. And consequently, something which has evolved in the environment, in the marketplace, it's going to be stronger than something that was designed, no matter how good the designer was. And there's a core humility in that recognition that nobody is smart enough, and that all you can really keep asking yourself is, is what I'm doing fit for purpose? And if I'm not seeing the results I expect, in what way isn't it fit? How might we improve it? And we apply that to our own thinking, then things keep evolving. You look back over the last 10, 15, 20 years of what I've been doing, it's always evolving. There's always new stuff coming. And there really isn't a secret to that innovation other than holding what I'm doing to some bar of expectation and realizing it's not fit enough, it needs to be better.
Thank you for your thoughts. We are coming to an end, David. Is there anything that you want to share with us that we haven't talked about? We have a couple of minutes before we close off.
So just in summary, I think we covered a number of exciting things, right? There's KMM Plus. There's the new Kanban guide available from kanban.university. There's the State of Kanban survey that you'll also find on kanban.university. And I think those were the key elements that we felt that people should know about, things that are new that have been happening. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Shaheen.
Yeah, thank you. Again, it's an honor to have you on the podcast. Thank you for spending your time with me. And if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way that they can get in touch with you?
I think the easiest thing is to email info@kanban.university. And right. There are 5 people who monitor that email, and they can forward anything to me. That's okay. The simplest thing to remember, info@kanban.university. Okay. People are welcome to connect to me on LinkedIn if they're not already connected there. And you can message me there also.
Okay, again, thank you so much, David. It was a pleasure having you. I hope to do this more often, maybe have you back in after the another KMM version in September, as I heard that you guys are planning
September of next year.
Oh, yeah. Not this year. Okay, so next year.
No, this year.
Okay, so hopefully sooner we get to talk.
But anyone who's using KMM Plus gets all the latest innovations first.
Yeah, and they can contribute, I'm assuming, too.
For very new material, we're always looking for beta testers and people who can try things out and contribute, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And at the moment, that's things like the appraisal method. That's something we're actively working on, the new leadership material. But there's also a portfolio program and project management extension, and those who are familiar with our more advanced work on enterprise services planning, we also need to complete the mapping of ESP for the higher maturity levels.
Right.
So there's plenty of work still to do. Right. We're not done yet.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you. And thanks to everyone who's been listening. Bye.